Okay, so as was mentioned, Jason Swick is from the Corvallis Church, the Circle Church of Christ, but he specifically works as the campus minister at the University Christian Center. And he is usually comes once a year to kind of preach and keep us in touch with that ministry. We do support this ministry. And so Jason is here with us, and Jason's a great guy, and has a great heart for students. And so look forward to what he has to say this morning. So Jason, come on, speak to us.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm excited to be here. It was fun driving up here this morning. I woke up to a lot of snow. Maybe not a lot of snow, but some snow, freezing rain. People enjoying driving about 35, 45 on the interstate. Took a little longer than I thought. It was kind of interesting, the comment this morning about announcements. My boys, when they were younger, they wanted to do these things at home. They called them dark night demos. So they'd turn out the lights, turn a couple of flashlights on so they had spotlights, and they would stand in our living room, and they would do a devotional. And it had singing and announcements. And that's what it was. So they were excited to do that. Well, it's good for me to be here, and I really enjoy the connection that we have between Circle and Kaiser, and the connections that we can have, and the opportunities that we have to be together. We do the men's gathering, and we'll come up here and play golf. You'll come down there, and we'll watch a football game. Now Eugene's getting involved, and we're going to go down and watch a basketball game down there. And so I love the connections that we're making as men, and the connections go even deeper. We have actually one of our college students. She came to us years ago, and as a freshman, she would come walking in the door to our Tuesday night gathering with two other people, and she was silent. She would not say anything to anyone, and you would talk to her, but it was like, you know, pulling information out of her to try to visit with her. And as soon as it was over, her and these two people, it was Shane and Lauren, they took off as well, and they would, you know, scurry out of there. And so you couldn't hardly visit with them. And that was year number one. And then as the years went by, they started to get more and more involved. They started hanging out more. And then we had Shane and Lauren, they get married, and they go down to Eugene, and now they're doing the youth ministry down there, which is really cool. And then their friend, the one that was hanging out with them a lot too, was Maria. And Maria just became our secretary at Circle. And so quiet Maria is now talking to people and talking a lot and loving it. And when I think about the connection that we have with Kaiser, so we knew that Julie is really smart. She is the brain of Kaiser Church. And so we wanted to learn from that. And so Maria and I came up here, and we spent some hours with Darren and Julie just listening and learning and just trying to figure some things out. And so Maria went back. She's so excited because now she has even more kind of direction and vision for what the ministry of being the church secretary can be, and is very excited about it. I'm also excited for Howard being here and having a college class. I see you put him in the warm room, which makes it hard to stay awake. But there's coffee, so that makes it good for college students. And we're excited about future partnering that's going on. We have a spring break mission trip. And so any of you that are college age, consider going on our spring break mission trip this year with us. We go down to the Bay Area Rescue Mission. Mission in San Francisco, and we work with the people there. And then at the end of that time working with, or during the day we work with them, and then during the evenings we get to work with kids. So we do an after school program. We do an evening, they call it Junior Chapel. They have a chapel with the adults, and then we get to take the kids and teach them about Jesus. It's an exciting thing and a fun thing and a transformative thing that we get to do, and we look forward to any college students from here that would like to go to come with us. So talk to Howard if you are excited about doing that. The other thing that I really enjoy and appreciate is how much you guys do for the UCC. We appreciate the financial gift that you give to us. We appreciate the connections and the talking and telling everybody about the University Christian Center, the opportunity that's down there. Anytime you hear of somebody that's in college, tell them about the UCC. And we get phone calls. I get phone calls all the time of people saying, hey, I've got so-and-so that lives down there. Could you connect with them? Could you talk to them? And a lot of times they're coming from a rough situation, and it's grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle that's calling, or even a youth minister that's calling and saying, hey, you know, this person, they're struggling. Can you go find them? And we go find them and invite them and love on them. And it's a transformative thing. And so part of that begins by you guys telling everybody about the gift of the University Christian Center that's happening down at Oregon State. So as we're going to be talking about Exodus 6, 1 through 8, and this God who hears and this God who rescues, and I think of kind of some stories that go along with this. Last fall, I was splitting firewood, and I had my youngest son, Jaron. He was out there, and he was taking the firewood and dragging it over to a little bucket, hooking it on his little electric John Deere tractor, and he would drive them over to the woodshed from the driveway where I was splitting them. And at one point, he's standing there right next to the van and far enough away, and I split this one, and this log flips and hits just perfectly and slams him right on the leg. And he's looking at me, and I was like, whoa! I said, did that hurt? Are you okay? And he's like, yeah. But I knew that he wasn't okay. He was holding it together really well, but he wasn't totally okay. So I walk over there and kneel down there next to him, and I say, man, that looked like it really hurt. And man, you're tough for holding it together. And then I wrap my arms around him. And that's when he starts to cry. And he has to cry just a little bit. And then I say, man, let's look at that thing. And I pull up his leg, and he's got a scrape on there. And I'm like, man, that's a big one there. You're a tough kid, and encourage him. And then the crying stops. And he pulls it together. And it's like, man, my dad saw what was going on inside. And he was there. And he stepped in there, and he was there. I think of another story. My wife, Amanda, her grandparents, their names are Ruth and George. And George would when Amanda was younger, he would say, hey, Amanda, come over here. And he would whisper, go get me a cookie. He wasn't supposed to eat a lot of cookies at the time because he had diabetes. And so it was like, but you would hear Ruth from the kitchen, George, you don't need a cookie. And he would be like, how did you hear that? And then the same couple later on, Ruth would say, George, I need whatever, whatever. George, are you listening to me? And she thought that he wasn't, you know, he's like, you're not listening. We need to go get our ears checked. So they go both, the only way he's going to go get his ears checked is if they both do. So they go in to get their ears checked. Turns out she has hearing loss. He has selective hearing. He could hear perfectly well. And then I think about the adventurous child, the child who climbs up into a tree and gets up there too far. Or like my neighbors. Now, my neighbor has two twins and twin boys, and they're really small, and they get themselves into a situation. It turns out it's only like this high, and they get standing up on it, and all of a sudden it's like, ah, 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 and it's daddy, daddy. And then what does dad do? He runs over and grabs them. He hears and he rescues them from falling perilously 1 foot. But daddy is there, and daddy hears. And as I was kind of thinking about and preparing for what we were going to talk about today, I came across something as I was looking into this an ethics course. I'm teaching an ethics course, and within this ethics course, I learned something. I learned something new about God. And it's always good to learn something new about God every once in a while. But I learned this thing that begins in Genesis chapter 21. And in Genesis chapter 21, Isaac has been born, and this means bad things for Hagar and Ishmael. Because now they find themselves being kicked out of the house, and they have nowhere to go. This is in a sense a divorced woman, a single parent now, and she's been given basically a gallon of water or a flask of water. She's going to take it off, and they've drank all the water, they're done. And she thinks they are going to die. And we pick up the story in verse 14. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He sent them on her shoulders and sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered the desert of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down about a bowshot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there, she began to sob. And God heard the boy crying. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. And then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. I think about Hagar. Hagar had a big problem. She's out of water. She's in the desert, she has nowhere to go, and her son is dying. This is a huge problem. And so what does she do? It's so big that she breaks down and sobs. And then God shows up. God hears the sobbing, hears the crying, sees the brokenness, the injustice, and he shows up. And he doesn't just show up and say, okay, here's the water, and now go on and do whatever you want. He shows up and then gives her a new direction in life. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to be with your son. And so now go. And I think about that, and I was like, man, does this show a character trait of God? And then we turn to Exodus chapter 2. We pick up the story in Exodus chapter 2. The background already is that the Israelites have come down to Egypt, and you know the story of them coming down to Egypt. Everything is going good, and they have the favor of Pharaoh. That Pharaoh dies, a new Pharaoh comes in, and he says, ooh, I don't like these guys because they're going to take me over, and so now what am I going to do? I am going to put you into slavery. And you're in bondage, you're in slavery, now you're making bricks for me, and you're working hard for me, you're no longer free. And it comes, we pick up the story in verse 23. So during that long period, the king of Egypt died, the Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help, because of their slavery, went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. And I think about this, who is this God? Who is this God that we see here? A God that sees slavery, injustice, and the brokenness, and the people are crying out. And he's a God who hears. And not only does he hear, but he's concerned. And I've wondered, why are you concerned about this, God? Why? You've got so many people all over the globe, and why are you concerned about these people? Why do you care about me? And yet God does. God hears the injustice, and he steps into it. So in Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 7, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So we've heard that. So, not only is he just concerned, I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of all of these people. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So God hears the pain, he sees the injustice, and he plans a rescue mission using Moses. And God continues to reveal himself in verse 14 when he says, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. I am the God who hears your pain. I am the God who is concerned about your pain. I am the God who sends somebody to do something about it. And I think about this, and how would you respond to a God like this? How would you respond to a God who's there when you're hurting? A God who is concerned about the injustice that's happening in your life and in the lives of those around you. Well, the Israelites, when they hear about this, this is their response. Exodus chapter 4, verse 29. Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites, and Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. He also performed the signs before the people, and they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped. So the beginning is, man, there's a God concerned about me. There's a God who has come to rescue me. But you know what's going to happen? Right after this, it gets worse. Now you got to make bricks without straw. It gets tremendously worse. It looks insurmountable. Are you going to give up on the God who says, I'm going to rescue you then? And then we come to the passage that was read in Exodus chapter 6. And we're going to jump down to verse 6 here. Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with my own and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. And as you read this, what do the Israelites have to do? What role do they have to play? It's like, really, it's watch God work and trust that he is going to be doing something for you. And then when the time is right, do what he says. So when he says go, do that, go. When he says to cover your door with the blood, do that. So do what he says, but watch. So God heard the cries of the Israelites, and he rescued them. Just like Hagar, God heard the cry of Hagar and rescued her. So what happens next in the story? Well, in Exodus chapter 14, they come to the banks of the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army is coming, and they don't trust God. After God has done all these mighty acts, now when it gets really bad again, they're gonna be afraid. And God's like, I'm going to take care of this. So he parts the Red Sea, they pass through, and he destroys the army. So he hears again, and he rescues. And then in Exodus chapter 15, the people are crying out because they come to a place and it has bitter water, water that's unfit to drink. God hears the cry and he rescues them by making the water drinkable. And then in Exodus chapter 16, the people are crying out because they're hungry. God hears the cry and he rescues them by providing manna and quail. And then you have Exodus chapter 17. The people are crying out because they're thirsty again, and this time there's no water around. And God hears their cry, and he brings water out of the rock. So God heard and rescued. God heard and rescued. God heard and rescued. And then you come to this place in Exodus chapter 19 that they come to the place that God promised to bring them to. God promised Moses that I will be with you and I will bring you to this mountain, to Mount Sinai. And so they come here. And look at how God remembers and views the Exodus. Exodus 19, starting in verse 3. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." It's an amazing imagery. God says, "You saw what I did in Egypt. And even with all of the things that we see in terms of Israel not trusting God all the way through this journey through the wilderness, God looks at that as, I brought you, I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself here at the mountain. That's how God looks at it and how God views it. And now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations you will be my treasured possession. And although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So God says, look at all of this stuff that I've done. Not only did I hear you and rescue you out of slavery and out of Egypt, I didn't just say, okay, now I did it, now here, go ahead and go on. But all the way through, God is showing us, I heard, I rescued, I heard, I rescued. That's the character of God. And how God's character is being shown. And now, here's an amazing thing. Now we come to this thing called the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20. Because now God says, okay, let me give these to you. And I've always looked at these Ten Commandments as, okay, these are the rules. Follow all these rules, and then you'll be okay. But here's the thing that I learned is, what if we bring this idea of God hears and rescues, and this character that God has shown us through the entire book of Exodus, to bear on the Ten Commandments? Now, what do we see? Exodus chapter 20. "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." So it begins with, I am the Lord. This takes us back to the burning bush. The God who heard, the God who built a rescue mission with Moses. "I am the Lord your God." Who chose this? Who chose to be the God of the Israelites? Did they get to choose? No. God says, I chose you and I did all of this. I brought you here. I brought you here on eagle's wings, remember? I brought you out of slavery. I gave you freedom. By God's grace, this happened. Not because of anything that the Israelites did. It's simply based on the grace of God. And so God did all this first. And then we look at verse 3. Because God did all of this, because God is the God who hears and rescues, then you shall have no other God before me. Why would you need another God when you have a God who does this? A God who hears, a God who cares, a God who loves, and a God who rescues. I don't need anything else. So you should have no other gods before me. You shall make for yourself, and you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of all of these different things. So these commands, and then the next one, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. These commandments will teach us how to love and respect the God who hears and rescues. How do I honor, how do I love, how do I live for this God who loves and respects me? So this is not something that's now done grudgingly. This is something done with joy. It's like, you've done all of this. Now, what can I do in response? And then we get to the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. And he talks about 6 days you will work, one day you will take it off. It's been interesting to me that God gives us a gift of saying, hey, you know what? You need to take a day off. You need to take a day of rest to hang out with me. Why? Because I'm really good. I'm here to hear all of the stuff that's going on in your life. I'm here to be with you, to rescue you, to walk with you. So take a day a week to spend with me. And it's amazing to me how many conversations that happen of, well, you don't really have to take the Sabbath because we're not under a law anymore. So I don't have to do it. I can work myself to death instead. God gave us a gift. And we fight against it. God is a God who hears that we are stuck in a rat race, that we are chasing after all of these things. I have to, I need to, I should, all of this stuff. Or you have the right to have good food. That's what Fred Meyer, I think, likes to talk about a lot. You deserve, actually, I think is what they say. You deserve this. And so we chase after all these things. And God says, I know that. I hear that. I want to rescue you from that by giving you a day of rest, a day to spend with me. He hears and he rescues. And the rest of these, starting in verse 12, they deal with relationships with each other, but they deal with relationships with each other in view of the character of God. So if God is a God who hears of injustice and hears of pain, and he's a God who rescues from that, then we need to be people who are not bringing pain. So step one, we honor those who give us life. We honor God and our parents. We listen to them. We learn from them. And we see this because of basically going back into verses 4 through 6, because they're supposed to be people, our parents are, ones that are fearing God, teaching us to fear God, and seeking to walk with God as well. And so we want to honor our parents. Step 2, we don't cause others to cry out in pain, suffering, and oppression. We seek ways not to cause that. And so God hears the cries of murder victims and their families. God hears the cries of kids in broken families and devastated spouses that comes when people commit adultery. God hears the cries of the wronged that are stolen from, the wronged that have lost things because of false testimonies. God hears those things. And so we want to be people who don't do those wrong things because we don't want to be causing that. And step three, if God is a God who hears and rescues, then we need to be people who are content with and trusting that God will take care of us completely. So don't covet other things. Trust God. God is a God who hears. God is a God who gives. Now, to live this way can be significantly harder in the beginning, because it doesn't chase after the whims that we have and our selfish desires. It's living in a different way, and yet it's living in a life of freedom. And as we trust and we learn to trust, this life of freedom becomes amazingly good. Especially when we think all the way back to Exodus 3, when God tells Moses, "I am going to be with you." And then we go clear all the way forward to the end of Matthew, where Jesus says, "I will be with you always, to the very end of the age." So we think about the commandments now as not necessarily rules to follow like the Pharisees would do. We got to follow all these things and make sure we do those. But as revealing the character of God and how God is a God who hears and rescues, a God that loves you enough to care and to listen, and that has amazing love. Amazing love. I love doing that. I love hearing that. And then it makes me think about, now how do I live this? How do I live within this place of living the character of hearing God and rescuing, hearing where God is working and rescuing? So I think about my friend, a friend from Iran who came to the UCC, and he came walking in, and you know, being from the Middle East, there's some trepidation about having somebody that's different come in. So he comes in, we start talking and visiting, and he starts coming to our Tuesday night gatherings. And we just happened that year to be going through living the words of Jesus. And one night, it was like the third or fourth night that he had been there, we're talking about how do we live the words of love your enemies. And he hears that, reads that scripture, and verbally he's like, "Woo! This is so not what I've been taught. But it's so who God really is." This is a guy who has been seeking God his life, looking for where God is at, and all of a sudden, he sees this glimpse of who God really is. And he grabs onto that, and it transforms his life. This guy becomes a Christian, and really writes a ticket to never go home again. He can never go home. Because if he does, he dies. And yet, how does he look at life now? He is a guy filled with joy, filled with excitement, so much that his roommate, who is from China, they're hanging out together, and he's always telling his friend, "You got to come with me, you got to come with me, you got to come with me." And so he does. And he starts coming, he starts hanging out, and then he says, "You got to go on this mission trip, this spring break mission trip with me." And as we're at the spring break mission trip, this guy is amazed. You would never see this in China. You would never see people loving the homeless like this in China. He's like, I've never seen this. This blows me away. And seeing how people are loving on the kids. And so we start studying together and studying the Bible together. And he becomes a Christian. And it's so exciting because God is a God who hears and rescues. And God is a God who, we've talked about a vision at Circle Church right now, communicating Christ from Corvallis to the continents. We have heard that God is like, "I want to be sending these people from all over the world to you." And so he's sending them, and we are showing them who Jesus is. And then they are taking that everywhere they go. The guy from China, he's back in China now. The guy from Iran, he is back in Cincinnati, hopefully going to LA to be down there and to live down there and to get a job and to work down there. And then I think about the couple that I talked about clear back in the beginning, Shane and Lauren, who came in and are super quiet, but grow and learn and invest. Because what can happen is that we can come in and we can hold back reserved. And we can say, you know, I believe in you, God, with a mental ascension, but I'm not giving you my heart. I'm not giving you my life. I'll give you my Sunday morning, but that's about all I'm going to give you. But I think about those that choose to say, I'm going to give you everything. Shane and Lauren chose to do that. And Shane grew tremendously. Shane went down to Eugene, and now he's a youth minister down there, working volunteer youth ministry down there as just out of college, early 20s, and he is pouring into the teens down there. And then I had the blessing of working with him as a co-laborer around Lake Christian Camp this last year, teaching the kids about baptism and communion, and hearing his ideas and working with him through this. And how amazing it is that God can grow us. And now we have another cool thing that's happening. We have an apprentice at the UCC. His name is Josh Stutzman. He grew up at Newburgh, the Newburgh Church of Christ. Went clear over to the East Coast. Found out he doesn't like the East Coast, the Bible Belt. And he came back. He's like, I want to be in the Northwest because I want to reach people. And so he's working with us for 2 years, and he is so excited to go out and hear. We go out and we listen. We listen for God to say, who are you bringing to us? And how are we going to walk with them? And we take steps of faith. There's a program at Oregon State University called the Conversant Program where people are learning English, and we get the opportunity to talk with them for an hour once a week, a specific person. God brought me another family. This time the family is from Iraq. His kids are 8, 6, and 4. And we are talking together. And I'm learning a whole bunch about the Muslim faith, specifically the Shia, all kinds of things from him. And he's a guy who continues to seek. And now we get to talk. God brought him in. There's another family that came from Saudi Arabia. Two twin daughters. And they came in and we just started connecting. What's going to happen? I don't know. Is it on me to do it all? No. Because God is a God who hears and rescues. And I'm like the Israelites. What do? Or like Moses, I'm just going to step in and walk with you. And God, where are you going? What are we doing? And to be present. And to take those urgings as we listen to God and listen to people and bring them into a relationship with God. And encourage them in that way. So what is God saying to you this morning? What's he saying? Have you heard that God is a God who hears and rescues? Do you believe that God actually hears, or do you feel like Amanda's grandmother Ruth, that I'm talking but George isn't listening? Do you feel like that in your walk with God, that I'm talking a lot, God, here? Are you listening? Well, I want you to know that God is a God who hears and rescues. Sometimes it's not on our timetable. Most of the time it's not the way that we would actually think that he's going to rescue us. But he does it the way that he knows is the best way. Or are you someone who is like my son Jaron that was hurting and you're trying to make it on your own? You're trying to just push through, you know, pull up your bootstraps and just make it happen, tough it out, grit it out. But God is a God who is hearing even in that situation. And he can rescue you even in that one. He's right there with open arms to share in your pain, to listen. That's who God is. So the foundation of all of this is that God is crazy about you and wants you to be like Him, to have His character of listening and rescuing others and rejoicing in what He continues to do both in you, for you, and for those around you, and that He's at work and He's wanting you to walk with Him. He gave you Jesus Christ. He rescued you from sin. He gave you freedom. Think about this freedom. Freedom to live every day freely for Him. Throw off the sin that is so easily entangling you. Throw it away because you have the freedom to live for Him right now. Trust that. And if you're struggling with it, He's listening. He's listening. So if you need to be rescued, pour your heart out to God and to someone else here today, because they want to listen. And if you've been rescued, then praise God. Praise God like we did in the song, "Had it not been the Lord who's on my side." And now I can praise Him. So let's stand and sing to a God who hears and rescues.